You're listening to a Wheeler Centre podcast.
I think being a migrant, it also requires you to be creative. Like, we know the ancestry we come from, and that's not the world we're in. So it just requires a certain level of innovation to not lose yourself.
In this episode of the Wheeler Centre podcast, playwright S. Shaktitharan, chef Manoli De Silva, and comedian Saren Jayaman come together with host Bhakti Puvanantharan on the set of the multi-award-winning theatrical epic Counting and Cracking to discuss the ways history, creativity, and the Sri Lankan diaspora culture inform their work.
Welcome. Vanakkam. And it's such a privilege to be here with you today. My name is Bhakti Puvanantharan. I'm the Entertainment and Features Editor at the ABC, and I'm your host for today's event. I'm also one of the lucky people who was attending the Melbourne premiere of Counting and Cracking last night, an evening I have waited 5 years for. And that's the event that's prompted this meeting of keen minds. But let's do an acknowledgement of country first. I'd like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nation as the traditional owners of the land on which today's event is taking place. I acknowledge and pay my respects to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples and their elders, past and present, and acknowledge any First Nations people here with us today as well. This event is presented in partnership with the Wheeler Centre, Rising, and the University of Melbourne Arts and Culture, so thank you to all of them for their support of this panel. So let's get started by introducing our sparkling panellists today. S. Shaktitharan is a Western Sydney storyteller with Sri Lankan heritage and Tamil ancestry. He's a writer, director and producer of theatre and film and composer of original music. I've had to edit this on the fly today because it's so long.
You got sent a really long bio and I said, pick your favourite two sentences. So. Yeah.
His debut play...
I mean, you
play...
can stop, it's fine.
I think we should say this line. His debut play, Counting and Cracking, received critical, commercial and community acclaim. The script won the Victorian Premier's Literature Prize and the New South Wales Premier's Nick Enright Prize for playwriting, as well as 7 Helpmans and 3 Sydney Theatre Awards. So I think we should give that a clap. Manoli De Silva is a passionate chef that brings a vibrant energy both on and off the screen, most recently winning the hearts and minds of audiences with her personality, endearing mannerisms and flavour-packed food on MasterChef Australia Season 13. Foundation of Manoli's cooking stems from her Sri Lankan heritage, from cooking alongside her mum from early childhood and being taught that she could incorporate absolutely any ingredient into a delicious meal. Manoli has a degree in chemical engineering and is now the proud owner and restaurateur of Ella by Manoli in Darwin. She's flown out here just for this, so thank you. And Saren Jayaman is an award-winning comedian, writer and presenter. Due to a lack of CPD hours, he is no longer allowed to call himself an accountant. While not himself an industry darling, he does play squash with some, making him industry darling adjacent. Saren's TV appearances include Question Everything, The Weekly, Celebrity Letters and Numbers, and he can even be seen in the background of a Thor movie. Thank you.
I insisted she read every line in that bio.
Saren, can I please engage you to write my bio?
Best bio ever. All right, I'm going to start at the start. How did your parents and elders teach you to be creative? Do you want to go first, Shakti?
That means you want me to go first, yes. Yeah.
It does.
Well, I think economically they were like, please don't be creative. Which is interesting because my mother is here and also a Bharatanatyam dancer and has a company. But then, you know, she just doubled down on that because she knew how hard that life was. But, you know, kids don't listen to their parents. They watch them. And So what she said was pointless, I guess, because I could see how much her ability to survive and thrive in Australia was connected to her dance. And I think as a kid I fell in love with, you know, I'm quite anti-authoritarian, and which is horrible for my mum, but the moment before the lights go down on a stage, anything can happen, you know. I really love that feeling. Like, it's like we could do whatever we want on the stage. That is something that is not really possible anywhere. And I think being a migrant, it also requires you to be creative. Yeah, like we know the ancestry we come from, and that's not the world we're in. So it just requires a certain level of innovation to not lose yourself.
Mm. Minali.
Very similar to what you said. It was just, I think in hindsight, it was all about watching my parents. And my mom, being a migrant, you know, I moved in 1992 to Melbourne from Sri Lanka, and basically like put everything that she knew to use, you know, utilizing like turning vegetables into magic, you know, like creating this delicious stuff that I didn't appreciate at the time, and never wasting anything. Like that was the way that she showed her creativity, and it was through something that she never studied. It was just something that she did. You know, that was her outlet for her creativity as a mum of three girls. And I think I also followed in her footsteps because I am greedy. And I always got in trouble for eating things that were raw, and if someone left something on a table, it was gone, right? I was, you know, moving from Sri Lanka to Melbourne as a six-year-old and eating a hot dog for the first time, and you're like, what is this deliciousness? And from that point, you have this formative experience which got me into completely loving food, you know? It was kind of similar to my mum. And I think creativity comes from almost like a lack of means and just figuring out how to make the best of what you've got. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's almost... like indirectly they influenced me to be creative. I guess like you'd have to come up with creative ways to be like, yeah, no, I was definitely studying, Mum. no alcohol anywhere in sight, you know what I mean? Like, so you've got to come up with creative stories to thrive and flourish in Australia. But
lying is a form of creativity, yeah. Yes.
That's what I'm trying, yeah. I'm just worried they might be here, but I. But yeah,
they always knew. Yeah,
of course they did, but yeah. Also, I think I don't know. My mum was a big, like, she grew up in a convent, and she read. She kind of, I would say that she had the life that I'm describing in Malaysia, where she grew up, where she was sort of like reading Jane Austen and trying to keep that private from her parents, and she was living in her own internal world. And I think I just would have absorbed that inherently as well. Like, she's wouldn't consider herself creative at all, but I think she was a bit of a trailblazer in her own life. Yeah. And so, yeah, that obviously... now I've just described myself as a trailblazer. That's not what I mean. But, yeah, but you know.
No,
what, yeah.
I know what you say. When you make your creative work now, and there's so many different fields represented here... Who are you making it for? Who do you have in mind when you're making your work?
I think this is something that I've only just recently evolved in my own creative career. I reckon originally, especially doing comedy in Australia, a lot of it is going to bars and pubs, RSLs, and like performing to people who are kind of mainstream Anglo-Australian. In the cities, they might be left-leaning, and so you can lean into politics and stuff like that. But in a lot of the circumstances, I've just done a tour of regional Victoria with Comedy Festival. It's like what you consider to be country Australia, you know what I mean? And so a lot of the time you are conscious of that audience and you're trying not to beat them over the head with your own ideas, and you've got to kind of, there's this like, you've got to meet them halfway first, so that you can then make them relax and trust that you know what you're doing, and then you can introduce ideas you want to talk about. And so I spent 10 years of my career doing that. And then over the last couple of years, maybe now because I feel more confident, I have more skills, now I'm like, oh, I just want to talk about what I am interested in. And weirdly, I don't know if it's because I have more experience and I'm better at what I do, or if it's because I'm now honouring what I want to talk about, but it feels like that's been a very powerful creative shift.
Yeah.
Which I feel has made me a better creative. Yeah.
So how do those jokes land in, like, the Ballarat RSL?
I mean, I didn't do them in Ballarat, but I... no, I did, actually. I don't know. I guess there's a pendulum that I feel, anyway, of sort of being aware and conscious of who your audience is, but then also respecting what you have to say and understanding that, yeah, whatever you're passionate about is going to be the thing that actually connects with people most. Mm. And so in comedy anyway, it is very much trying to swing on that pendulum and trying to find that balance, if that makes sense. Yeah.
I want to hear Shakti's take on this question.
I think in terms of the social and political aims of Candy and Cracking, the craft of the writing has to be about the Sri Lankan audience, mainly because it terrifies me and like it requires all my capacity. But over the years of development with Eamon, so Eamon Flax, the artistic director of Belfar, we made Candy and Cracking together. That's actually a conduit for a certain type of writing, but that's not the same as what our awareness was of who the show would be for. And so you have to trust that a deep dive into what the Sri Lankan community might need opens up a portal on the other side to what everyone needs. And over the course of the Sydney season of Candy and Cracking, it was fascinating to see how important it was for Sri Lankans to not only see their own story on stage, but see other people who aren't Sri Lankan witness that with them, and then embrace that with them. And the task of that show is to allow those simultaneous exchanges to happen at the same time inside the audience, so that as we find ways to reconnect and re-remember our own identities and histories, we also are saying that we deserve to do that in public, and it's part of the collective function of our society to allow all groups to do that in a vulnerable way in public and for us to embrace each other in that act. And in doing that, we also learn more about ourselves. But it's taken me a full cycle to learn that.
Yeah, well said. So, Manoli, when you're making content or in like coming up with a new dish, it's a quite personal thing. Where do you get your inspiration from and what's your process for that?
When I first started cooking, especially on MasterChef, I think that was honestly the catalyst that pulled me out of this imposter syndrome that I'd been living in for decades, honestly. I think that the judges were so good at identifying someone that was trying to be something else that they weren't, and they were like, just stop trying too hard, just do what you're good at. And after being eliminated, getting back on, being eliminated, coming on a second show, and I was like, what am I doing? I realized I can't, I just need to do what I do best, and what I know and my history, no one else can recreate. Like, that's my story. And I think once I learned to be true to what I put out in my food, in anything that I just put out into the world, I think it gave me so much confidence in the way that I operated that it allowed other people to also do the same. And through Instagram and social media, you actually like get a lot of people who get in contact with you and tell you their story and tell you that they're so happy to see someone who is just representing, it was really interesting. They were like, thank you for representing Sri Lanka so well. And I was like, what do you mean? I'm just being me. And it felt like I was, I don't know, it felt too easy because I was just being me. But then I realized that's the energy that I needed to put out into the world. And if it felt good for me, like I was a migrant kid that grew up in Melbourne, that moved to Darwin, that fell in love with, you know, food from a very young age. And I think dealing with the barriers that I felt placed on me somewhat by the Sri Lankan community at times, you know, even from the aunties, they're like, what are you doing? You can't do that. Like, that's not Sri Lankan. And I was like, I'm Sri Lankan and I'm making it. So is that, that's authentic, right? Like, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. And I think I just realized I had to be the person that I wanted to see in the creative industry, in media, because I never saw someone like me represented on TV, and I was always trying to be, you know, the white presenter on TV cooking something. And, I really was trying to put myself into a box, and I realised the moment that I stopped doing that, the creative juices just started to flow. Everything became so much easier, and the decisions that I was making was purely based on a set of values that I'd built for myself over, you know, nearly 40 years. And I realised that if I was operating on a good set of values and just doing things that made me happy, the creative stuff just happened naturally. Yeah, it was a really wonderful lesson to learn. And now I feel like I'm just living a crazy dream. And it took me over 30 years of doing engineering, trying to fit myself into this mold of what I thought society wanted me to be. And I realised life is so much better if you just do what you want. Like, you're putting out much better energy into the world. It's, you become a happier person. It's, I think it's just like this positive perpetual cycle. And yeah, I don't know. I think the creative stuff just happens so naturally now, and the dishes completely reflect that.
We kind of bonded back in the green room. The three of us have degrees and none of us use them.
It's true.
Just annoyed a lot of parents then.
Don't go to university, we said. Sitting in a university.
It's a waste of time.
Why did you go to that panel? Idiots talking on.
I use my degree. I just want to put that on the record. Saren, can you identify a moment or a piece of work that you've been proud of recently and you thought, yeah, that's what I'm chasing?
What if the answer's no?
That's okay.
Yeah, I think so.
It doesn't have to be recent. It could be from...
No, definitely. But I... Yeah. Looking back, especially after COVID or even through COVID and reflecting on... COVID was a great time for... That sounds weird. But for me personally to be like... having given up on an accounting career to go into the arts and then making that decision to go full tilt into the arts in like 2018, 2019, and then the world shut down, and having this moment of panic initially, but then realising that because I'd shifted from doing comedy as a hobby to all of a sudden it was this career that I was trying to make, and I almost, like Manoli was talking about, I was trying and focusing on everyone around me and what they were achieving, and then focusing on what I thought I should have achieved by this length of time. And then in COVID, getting the stage pulled away from me, replaced with Zoom, which was the, like, oh man. Doing comedy on Zoom was like, if you did comedy at a corporate gig, you got to leave. Whereas with Zoom, you just close the lid and then you're in your bedroom and you're like, you've invited the stank into your own safe space. But having the stage pulled away and then realizing that I was doing comedy because I loved the, yeah, and it was like something I was passionate about and excited to do, when the doors reopened after COVID, I went back in and tried to hold on to that and not treat it like a job, even though it was a career. And I think more so than any particular work that I've done, it's like that having holding on to that attitude is what I'm kind of proudest of. Because, yeah, I don't know, you can always compare yourself to anyone else, or you can always... the people I compare myself most to are the people I started as graduates with at KPMG, who are now partners and, like, yeah, have two-story houses or whatever. And I'm, yeah, doing gigs in Ballarat. But I...
So the degree is useful.
But I would never, I would never change that. And I feel like the work itself is the reward kind of thing, rather than any specific achievements within it. And yeah, it's been getting to a place where I'm like, oh, this is the lifestyle that I've chosen, and I feel so blessed to have fallen into that. Yeah.
It strikes me in your answer and in Manoli's too that all of us have battle scars from getting to the points of our careers in which we are now, and that there's a bittersweetness to that success.
Yeah, and I guess I think that's probably necessary to it's like a little test that the universe throws you to make sure that you are on the right path that you're meant to be, kind of thing. Like, I don't think it would be as rewarding if it was too easy. And also, I always know what I have to go back to, which is like spreadsheets and it, you know. So I'll take, I'll take this whatever the stage brings any day over another spreadsheet. Having said that, I haven't done the last 2 years of tax, and if anyone can help me with that.
Shakti.
You just admitted to that on radio.
I'm a comedian. ABC. Most of these are jokes.
Shakti, I want to come to you and ask about our culture. Which parts of it do you feel inspired by, and which parts do you feel are absolutely fine to leave in the past?
Why do I get this question?
I'll share it, if that helps.
I think the multiplicity inherent in counting and cracking comes from reading stories like the Mahabharata and the Ramayana that have multiple protagonists, and you know, the Mahabharata, there's for those of you who don't know, there's the Pandavas, who are supposedly the good guys, but they do really dubious things, and the supposed bad guys, the Kauravas, do some really stand-up things amidst their general evilness that overshadow what the Pandavas do. And I think our culture understands that binaries is a human construct to make life easier to deal with and reduces our humanity. And we have this very, very sophisticated way of thinking about the world, which requires none of the Western world to be in or inhabit or understand. And through people like my mother, it's like there are ways to tap into that and be part of it. And I mean, that's actually what the dance and the music and the stories are all manifestations of that way of thinking about the world. Like, quite literally, they come out of that, and they're all interconnected because they're all manifestations of the same thing. So to have that as our core and our center is such a privilege. And it's like, when you're young, we discard it so easily. We're like, ah, fuck that. And like, it's so, but our elders keep it for us. And as we get older, like, I've become aware of how I'm keeping it now for other people to come into. And so that, I'm just blown away by that every day. And it really gives me strength to just be in the world with an understanding of how it is, and to not let any current forces of history or institutional or economic force decide who or what I am. So I love that. I think in terms of what I would love to change, I don't think we're very good at being vulnerable. and we have this repeated habit of showing our love by doing the opposite of it. and maybe that's because of how much violence there's been in our past, and because there's been such a drive to succeed and be seen as successful. And we've become these amazing doctors and lawyers and accountants and business leaders and, you know, there are Sri Lankan...
presidential candidates.
Exactly. And there are Sri Lankan refugees around the world who've become billionaires and, you know, but that comes at a price. That obsession with the image of success and being proud, which I am proud of, comes at a price of a fragility around saying that sometimes it's okay to not be okay. And I feel like our generation has the privilege of being able to look at this because we've grown up in the West. And I do feel that we are collectively working on that.
Yeah, there's a lot to sit with there. I mean, you're right. I think that the safety that we've been afforded in Australia, which your characters talk about really explicitly, means that we have the space to analyse this with depth rather than trying to survive.
Exactly.
And when you were talking about the Pandavas and the Bhagavad Gita, I was thinking about the story of Krishna, which he's this god that's beloved. And actually Krishna came, the Lord Krishna came from before a lot of existing Hinduism. It was a folk story, and he was this beloved god, but he was a very cheeky character, and there are things there that now maybe we would say were sexual harassment, but
he's fairly misogynistic sometimes.
Yeah, he was, but also beloved, and then a cheeky child, and so all these colors and this kind of myriad of human experience is reflected through those stories. Would either of you like to talk about the parts of the culture that you want to hold on to?
This is a really interesting question, because I think what I've learnt growing up is that there is so much that I don't know about my own culture. And I think being open to knowing that I know very little has been a really exciting journey in like understanding what being Sri Lankan means, being connected to culture, and figuring out, you know, how all of the history ties in, and almost just being this observer of what's happening in my life rather than having an attachment to an outcome. That's been really fun, because it's allowed me to not be afraid of any result that comes out of it. And especially when you're in the media, you're on a public platform. You know, I went from being in an office with lots of engineers who are very different to me. You know, I would go to work and I'd be like, hey guys, what's happening? And I was really me even as an engineer. And I was like, no one, I feel odd at work. And it was only after I got thrown into being in the public eye where I'm like, oh, I feel like me. There's more people like me here. And by doing that, I realized it can also be taken away from you very quickly, you know? Let's say I go out one day and there's some bad publicity about some bad decisions that I've made. Not that I make any, but if something like that comes to air, then you're open to judgment by everyone. You know, you see it in the news. And I think I've realized that what I've got right now could possibly be taken away at any point. So I'm just here enjoying the ride, and I think all my decisions now come from just having fun, like the values that I've got. You know, as an engineer, it was, all right, I need to have a good job, I need to buy a house. I still don't own a house, right? Nowhere near. But all of those things that were driving me were not, I think, for the right reasons. So if things were hard or stressful, it was so much stress on me to kind of get through it. But now I think my values have changed, and as a result, you know, I'm looking at the connection to culture and going through that journey almost like a kid. Yeah. And it's really fun. And I don't care if I fail. You know, what's? I'll ask my mum to move back in with her and my dad. They'd love it. So that's that's the worst that can happen. And I think knowing that has made everything else easy. Yeah.
Saran.
It is a really interesting question. I guess canning and cracking is really pertinent. I think because the character of Sid, like when I first saw it in Sydney, when it debuted in 2019, and immediately I had a connection to that opening scene where Sid is like performing the funeral rites but is sort of culturally very at sea. I had almost exactly the same experience where my mum's side of the family is Hindu, but they're all in Malaysia. I didn't grow up around Hinduism at all. And then I was raised Catholic. And then when my uncle passed away, I was in Malaysia for the funeral. And it was sort of, I was in my 30s or early, late 20s. And I was like thrown into the funeral rites. And it was very surreal. But yeah, so I could totally relate to that scene. And I said to Shakti, I'm going to say this, I actually also auditioned for the role, but you won't see me when you go see it. I also auditioned for MasterChef, so this is very incredibly triggering that you have me on this stage.
He also auditioned for editor of entertainment at the end of the
night. I don't just compare myself to accountants anyway, but I... that for me opened the portal, I guess, that you're talking about, Shakti, where being in that environment and having no idea what was going on, but knowing that there was there's whatever your mind is trying to make sense of stuff, but then you know that your heart is connecting with what's going on. And so that for me, after that, I did a deep dive into sort of Hinduism and Eastern philosophies more broadly. And I think there's a depth of just like weight to Eastern philosophy that we miss out on growing up in the West, which has all the stuff that I think you're talking about, Manoli, feels like inherently Eastern in the like detachment from outcomes and just throwing yourself into life as an observer and participating, but without feeling the need to like actually achieve specific outcomes, has been very freeing and liberating for me and has led me to where I feel like I should be. So I think that is definitely part of the culture that I very much, when I have a child, those are the types of values I would like to instill with them. In terms of what in a weird way, this is going to sound very weird, I don't even know if I should say it, but like, I feel like my initial desire to connect with culture was this sort of almost artificial, growing up quite white bread, private school, blah, 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 and then going into the arts and seeing that what was valuable about my background was my cultural background, and then almost wanting to connect to it as from a utility perspective, subconsciously, but just knowing that that would be my point of difference or whatever. And so that's the original reason I started talking about, when I first started doing comedy, I was like, I don't want to talk about culture or race at all. And I know that's quite common for a lot of artists, I think, from a migrant background, because you don't want to seem like you're leaning on a crutch, or you don't want to play into stereotypes. But then it just naturally emerges that you have to, because that's what an audience... So it's almost what I was talking about with your first question, where, like, when you're performing to a mostly white audience, they're going to see you as different, and they want to know... They want to hear from you about that. But they also have a very particular perspective on what that means, and it's usually quite stereotype-driven. And so you just kind of get pushed into a certain stream, if that makes sense. And I resisted that. And now when I talk about cultural stuff, I feel there's an authenticity, and it's rewarding because it's like coming from a place of connection rather than a place of trying to get something out of it. And so, yeah, I would say the thing I'd like to do away with is that the side of diversity that's a little bit like murky and try and like, you know, like I don't know what I'm trying
to
say.
But we made it 43 minutes before we said the word diversity,
yeah,
and I'm proud of that.
I'm sorry. But you know what I mean? Like, I've enjoyed having a more authentic connection to that cultural, or who I am, rather than a utility to it.
Yeah. There's a line that speaks to that, I think, in the play where right at the end where Sid sits down with Lily and says, connected almost to something. And I think that very, very succinctly encapsulates what we're all grappling with.
An almost connection.
An almost connection. Yeah, I misquoted it. I'm sorry. I just thought about... I answered the question in my own head, so I'm just going to tell you my answer as well, which I didn't prepare. But yesterday I live with my mum, and I asked my mum to oil my hair. And she told me a story she's told many times about how as children on Saturday mornings, her father would oil himself and sit in the sun on the porch, and then all the children would come one by one and they would all have their hair oiled and they would play for a couple of hours and then they would have their bath. And I thought, I could do that. Mm. I could start doing that on Saturday mornings. I live with my mum, so I sat on the floor and she put oil in my hair. And, yeah, I have such a deep longing for that life.
It's beautiful. My son has very long hair. We should start oiling. He's watching. He doesn't care about what I'm saying. He's watching videos at the moment, but I love that idea.
We will have an opportunity for audience questions in a moment.
I thought you were going to say for oiling.
And then the panel
and 2 hours
very
of play
strange
time.
Turn.
Yeah, and then we're going to run around and play. Yeah, hopefully. all right. So tell me about some Sri Lankan or South Asian artists who are inspiring you at the moment. Might start with you, Manoli.
Oh, wow. I actually have started reading... My auntie, Chandani Lokoge, writes novels, and I've never read any of her books up until now. It was, don't tell her. If you're my auntie, don't listen. And I've gone through life being like, yeah, it was a great book, it was a great book. Anyways... I've learned to, like, you know, I don't know what comes out sometimes to my family. I just turned away.
Lying is an art form. Established this, yeah.
It was a form of survival, you know.
Yes.
Learning how to navigate your way in a Western world and then being like, yeah, I did my homework. Oh, my parents are coming. Just flip open the maths book. Like, you get it down to a fine art, right? So anyway, I started reading my auntie's books, and she tells these like beautiful stories, and that's probably who I have spent a lot of time getting to know, and it feels like I'm getting to know my auntie, yeah, by reading her books. So if I'm being completely honest, I don't really watch the news. I found that it, you know, I tried to kind of stay away from a lot of media and... just letting ideas into my head that weren't my own. I really wanted to try and figure out like what my baseline thoughts were. So yeah, that's probably like as far as I've gone with artists.
What's your auntie's name?
Chandani Lokuge.
Okay, yeah. Which novel are you reading?
Testing her now.
Yeah, I know, I know. Yeah, it's like, I can't even remember. It's like got this, it's like a moon.
Okay, sorry, I put you on the spot.
Yeah, no, like I've just started, but it's basically like a relationship and very similar to what I imagine your story will be. It's like goes through decades. It's like the complexity of, you know, a Sri Lankan person living in like different kind of worlds. And yeah, it's given me a really big insight into her generation and way of thinking. But yeah, that's basically it. Like, yeah. There's a part of me that's like, oh, shame, you know? I
no,
don't really,
that's a good place to start. Like, start with your family. That's great.
But also I'm realising, even answering this question, that inherent need to please sometimes comes out. Mm. And I'm like, no, just be honest. Like, you've just read one book. You don't really pay attention to anything. Like, you live a life of food. And your basic thing is, like, looking for the next curry leaf plant
if you had just told me a TikTok that you liked recently, that also counts, right? Like, that's all creation.
Yeah. But I like to be almost, like, observant of my emotions and feelings. And I think if I vocalise it, then that awkwardness is not there. I just don't get anxious. So, yeah. Anyway, there you go. My intrusive thoughts are not out.
Yeah. I'm loving the therapy. Shakti, who are you?
I have done my tax and I haven't lied to my auntie. I just want to put that on broadcast. You can decide whether I'm lying or not. I think what's really interesting, I've been reflecting on this, that I'm answering your question indirectly, but is that we're in this moment, it feels like, where so many Sri Lankan artists are starting to hit their stride. And it's really beautiful because communities, there are parts of this, of Kani and Cracking, which have been profound and healing for a lot of our community. And there's parts of it which have really pissed some people off. And it's been fascinating for me being in a dialogue with those people and learning that we can have mutual respect for each other and different ways of going about something, and that disagreement is part of our relationship. My son's a funny part of his video. It's so exciting seeing a number of different Sri Lankan artists starting to make work in so many different spaces, because it means that we can show how we're not a monolithic community that thinks about things in one way. And therefore, no one is like that, and no community is like that. And it reaches to something which is like a better truth, I think, around finding ways to disagree is probably as important or more important than finding ways to all think the same thing. it's been fantastic. And it's like, you know, Shankri is a friend of mine. I know Shahan. And there's so many great music artists, and it's just like, it feels like a real wave of Sri Lankan and South Asian artists, you know, and like we're all just disobeying what our parents told us to do, and it's like it means that the complexity of us is being pushed to the forefront, which is a very human way for us to be in the world, and yeah, it feels really nice.
I think that the pressure that you've probably felt as, you know, this major work that represents the community, it's such a burden for you, because those of us who will make work after you will be able to add to that and be able to benefit from the...
Yeah, I'm really quite stupid about some things, and so I didn't know... that was a deal. And then like people come and talk to me and say things like, Jen's here, isn't he? But like, yeah, last night he was like, I can't believe that like one of the great Australian works gets to be a Sri Lankan Tamil work. And I didn't say this to you at the time, but I'm like, what work are you talking about, dude? Like, I don't, like, oh, fuck, right. And, you know, and then, like, and so it's just been fascinating to learn how important that is and why we can rage and say all we want about we don't need mainstream success, or we don't need, you know, like to be in the center of things. And but actually, if you're part of a society, everyone deserves their turn. And it's actually, you don't have a functioning democracy unless that everyone gets their turn. And so we do have to put the boxing gloves on and fight for that space because we deserve it.
It's a function of freedom, as you say, of democracy, the freedom to tell your story.
Yeah, and like in the center of things.
Yes. Soren, do you have any artists you want to talk about?
I'm just remembering when I described myself as a trailblazer and I'm sitting next to these two.
You described your mum as a trailblazer.
Definitely counting and cracking is, I think Shakti is a trailblazer. And that, yeah, for anyone who hasn't seen it, when you go see it, it is, it's so powerful. It's such a uniquely Sri Lankan story, but then also a migrant story, so relevant to Australia, but then also the nuance of the generational, the characters, and as I said, seeing myself in Sid and then seeing so much of my parents in the characters, despite, you know, obviously very different stories. But I think that the Australian art scene is full of really interesting South Asian talent, and it is also interesting to me as I'm 37, millennial or whatever, and then seeing the next generation now emerging, and they, I think, are very confident and don't have the same hang-ups of having grown up white or like trying to blend in, and they've like, there's this pride in who they are and where they come from, which is very almost inspiring to see from a,
yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah. It's really great.
Although I will say, someone
they're
came up to me.
They're far less twisted than us.
Yeah, they are, which is so cool. Although I did, I had a young guy came up to me and was like, oh, I've seen you on TV. And I think he was talking about Nazim Hussain. But I, but he was like, I want to, yeah, he's like, it's very inspiring. I would love to do comedy one day. And I thought, I've got to stop going on TV because I... ruining lives, but I am. Yeah. So I mean, obviously, there's people like Ramesh Ranganathan from the UK.
Yeah.
Seeing what he's achieved over there, and seeing how almost I would say the UK seems like 20 years ahead in terms of how
it is statistically 10 years ahead. Of
representation us. Yeah, is yeah. just so built into the entertainment fabric there. But then here, like I just finished comedy festival season, and there was a show. When I was up in Sydney, that they were the show before us, and it was full every night, and it was called Brown Women Comedy, and it's like a collective of female comedians from South Asian backgrounds, and they, a lot of them had really wanted to do comedy and had only had limited experience and didn't find the setup or infrastructure very inviting, and so they just went and created their own thing, and it shows that the audience was there, and that's really cool. So I think there's people, we're very inherently, I think in our culture, creativity comes quite naturally, storytelling, and it's there. And even though we've been funneled for whatever reason into professional careers because of a safety net or because of status, blah, 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 it's cool to see that creativity is like bursting at the seams in all these different forms, like music, art, theatre, comedy, and food. Yeah. And so I think across the board, anytime I'd be a bit ashamed to say this, but when I first started doing comedy, I would almost be a bit protective of my patch. And so anytime I saw another brown person, I was like, are they going to make it harder for me? And I would say yes, Dilruk did, but other Sri Lankan accountant, anyway. But but then apart, like now I'm like, Yeah, I see more of us wanting to collaborate and more of us wanting to, go in to fight for each other, and that's really cool.
That's beautiful. Unfortunately, I think we only have time for one question, so...
the pressure.
There's a lot of pressure. Does someone have the best question ever?
This relates to what Surrender just said, but keen to see what Shakti might respond as well. How do you respond when you see, like, real or perceived racism within your own community of Sri Lankans, like, from within your own community?
Oh, as in, like, the different groups in Sri Lanka? Yeah, yeah. Well, I wrote a play about it. Do you want me to go first?
Yes. you just said.
I mean, artistically, come and see the show. But, I mean, on a domestic level, I don't... My thing is, like, to call it out always, but to call it out with love. And I'm not saying that as in, like, everyone should do that. Like, it's good. I like... We all work with each other and other people are just like, you can't say that. And it's like, it's good teamwork. But it's like, as soon as that stuff creeps into any family or friend discussion, just call it out as soon as possible, but crack a joke about it. Probably not as funny as Ren would do it, but like make it funny and be like, that's, you know, show how ludicrous it is to think like that straight away. You know, has been my tactic, and it's insidious and it's part of our culture, absolutely. Trying to stop it at the root has been my goal, because if you leave it unsaid, it lingers, you know, and it sits in you in that room, and it makes it harder the next time. But I try to figure out a way to do it with kindness or humour.
So, Ren, you have... Hindu on one side and then Catholic on the other. So
yeah,
has that played into that?
Mum's Tamil and dad is Sinhalese.
Uniquely placed to...
Yeah. Interestingly enough, I guess I've been pretty lucky to not have witnessed too much, like, within community kind of prejudice. Although I would say that it was generationally like a thing. Like my mum, part of the reason why my brothers and I never really, we were so white bred is because of the conflict in Sri Lanka and my parents never really wanting to take us there. And also mum's, I think when they got married, I think there was sort of tension in her extended family about that as well. So we never really went to Malaysia where her family is. So that could be why I didn't really experience it too much, because we just sort of, yeah, I think my parents, again, like the play, my mum made a conscious choice to try to bring us up as Australian as possible. But weirdly, one of my writing partner, not for comedy but for other stuff, he's like a Pakistani migrant and comes from a very working class background, whereas my background more sort of middle class, I guess. And one thing that is really interesting about Australia is we connected, despite our upbringings being vastly different, there was so much shared understanding just being from a similar kind of diaspora culture. And that, I think, in most of the Sri Lankans I've met, most of the South Asians I've met who grew up here or moved here young enough, it's like that shared thing is unspoken and very instant and like speaks above any kind of prejudice, if that makes sense. And so that is one unique thing about Australia. That is a beautiful thing, despite whatever barriers we face and whatever things we need to dismantle and pull down. There is also this unspoken connection between people that I think, just having grown up here and faced what the culture is like here, that makes it very easy to fit in with people from a similar background. And it goes beyond South Asian, I would say. I've had that similar connection with people from South American backgrounds or whatever, where it's like there's a commonality to being a migrant in Australia. And it's almost like, I would say in Western Sydney in particular, but definitely the work that Shakti has done with like Co-Curious and stuff, it's like there's a new culture being forged, and that when we are making that, and it's very exciting and very interesting. And I think that that connection, in my experience, has trumped whatever prejudice might go back to the motherland kind of thing. So that is one positive of the Australian environment, I think.
What a hopeful note to end on. Thank you. That brings us to the end. Thank you to Readings, who will have copies of Shakti's books for sale. So they're just in the foyer there. I want to thank S. Shakti Dharan, Manoli De Silva and Saran Jayaman for a beautiful conversation. Thank you.
You've been listening to Bhakti Puvanantharan in conversation with S. Shakti Dharan, Manoli De Silva and Saran Jayaman. This event was recorded on Sunday, the 2nd of June 2024, on the set of Counting and Cracking at the Union Theatre as part of Rising. It was presented in partnership with Rising and University of Melbourne Arts and Culture. The official bookseller was Readings. Counting and Cracking is now playing at the Union Theatre until the 23rd of June 2024 as part of Rising. Tickets can be purchased via rising.melbourne. The Wheeler Centre podcast is produced on the lands of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nation. You can listen to more podcasts or explore videos, news and our full calendar of events at wheelercentre.com.